Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
720 WGN. John Landecker. Yeah, that is off-Broadway. Stay in time. And we are staying in time. 735 WGN Stay in Time time. all right. Let's get down to business. Okay. Danny Zalisco. Danny, do I pronounce your last name correctly?
You have it perfect.
Thank God. All right, Danny. Here's the deal. What is the name of your book?
All Excess.
Not All Access, All Excess.
It's
right?
kind of a play on words. Right? As a concert promoter, we have passes that are issued for every show that we do, so people can move in and out of backstage and so forth. Right. And those are all access passes. But after being a concert promoter for almost 50 years, it's really all excess.
I'm sure many listening right now remember concerts that they've gone to, maybe even recently, especially if they did something and they won tickets or something from a radio station, and they had a pass that said, you know, meet and greet before the show or meet and greet after the show. But very few people got the all access pass, because that is exactly what it says. You could go, if you had an all access pass, right, Danny, you could go just literally anywhere, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, some of them, you know, the upper bands, the bigger bands will put little stars or colored dots and things on them that indicate you can go on the stage, you can't go in the dressing rooms, but all access means you go everywhere.
Yeah, really. It is something else. And what you're implying then, Danny, if I've got this right, is that years and years in the concert rock and roll business, there were excesses? Are you sure? are you sure there was excesses so that it would be all excess?
No more than in the radio business.
Touche, my friend. Touche.
Sorry.
Now, the thing, though, that really just blew my mind about this, and I've read the first five chapters of the book. I haven't gotten to all of it yet. I got to recommend it to anyone who's interested in concert promotion and also the iconic sports figures of Chicago. The first parts of this book blew my mind.
So, great.
You graduate from where? What high school?
I went to Maine East.
Yeah.
Until 1972. I grew up around Milwaukee and Oakton.
Yes, and you were Niles. Cubs. And you were a Cubs fan and a Bears fan.
Yes, also a Sox fan. I mean, who could deny Minnie Minoso?
Not me.
You know? And all the 59 Go-Go Sox, Louis Aparicio, Nellie Fox. I'm giving my age away here, but
it's okay.
Yeah, so I mean, the Chicago in the 60s, by far, I think, was the sports mecca of the world. You had the Blackhawks, you had Bobby Hull and Stan Mikita, you had the Bears, you had the Cubs, and you had the Sox. I mean, the four, you know, all we were missing was Michael Jordan and the Bulls, and they came along a little bit later. My brother and I used to go and made a big hobby and almost a life out of going over to Wrigley Field and hanging out on Waveland Avenue, waiting for the guys to come in before the practices and before the games. And we got to know them all pretty well on site. And one thing led to another, and I ended up booking Brian Piccolo for some speaking engagements. Sayers, Fortunato, Pettibone. All these guys were, you know, I mean, they didn't make the money then that they make now. So in the off season, these guys would have to take side jobs and work regular jobs. And at the time, you know, we found them some speaking engagements where they'd make a few $100 to go sign some autographs and say hello to people for an hour or so. Now they get thousands and thousands for doing those kind of things, or just for signing, period. But back then it was different.
How old were you then?
Well, my first booking was Johnny Klipstein at 9 years old. Johnny used to pitch for the Cubs and the Twins. You know, when I look back, it was like I look at the back of the baseball cards.
Yeah.
And you remember they'd, on the back of the cards, it'd say hometown. It'd say Chicago, Illinois.
Right.
So we'd go to the, you know, find a dime somewhere, and I'd look in the back of the card, and we'd go to the phone book. People used to list their names in phone books. And we'd call them up and say hi and tell them what fans we were. And most people were very receptive about it. They loved getting the calls. It was kind of like probably getting texted today or something, you know.
Yeah, but the stories that you recount in your book, when you graduate, after you graduate from high school, and then immediately after hanging out around Wrigley Field, where the Cubs and the Bears both played at that time,
right,
by the way.
Right.
You made, at a young age, personal connections with numbers of people of, like, Ernie Banks, Brian Piccolo, Gale Sayers. And I don't mean just, hi, how are you? It's nice to see you again. It went way beyond that. Can you get into that? Because it is astounding.
Well, you know, when we were doing the thing with the Bears, we'd go there on Saturdays for practices. And sometimes, if they won the week before, Old Man Hallis would let us go into the park and watch practice, and sometimes even go on the field and shag balls from Bobby Joe Green punting, which was incredible.
Yeah.
Rudy Bukich would stand at the 50-yard line and throw bullets at the crossbar of the field goal. You know, 9 out of 10 times he'd hit it. Like, what a great quarterback he was. We got close to these guys, and they would feel bad about us having to take the bus in the freezing cold home. On a number of occasions, Brian or Jim Purnell, Rudy, they would drive us all the way to Niles, and most of them live south.
You're talking about Brian Piccolo, right?
Correct.
Yeah, Brian Piccolo would drive you to Niles.
Right, and then back. Brian lived in Beverly.
Unbelievable.
He was very smitten with me on the first day that we met because Sayers and Butkus showed up the same day. They were all drafted in the same year, except Piccolo was signed as a free agent. They passed him over because the word was he was too small. Yet he was the leading ground gainer in the whole college of conference in 1964. He outran Sayers.
Right.
And he got passed over. So I approached him when he first got there, and he thought I was nuts because Sayers and Buckets are standing. He goes, kid, are you stupid? Those are the big guys over there. Those are the stars. I'm nobody. And I rattled off all the figures of what he had done the year before and how he gotten signed and how he's going to be great and don't worry about it. And we were immediate friends. So the phone calls and he walked me into every game he could. Which was all of them, if I caught them at the right time. And that's the only way you could get into Wrigley Field, because that's like a nightclub compared to Soldier's Field.
Right.
And there was no tickets. The only way you get a ticket to Wrigley Field is if somebody took you or somebody died and you were able to buy a season ticket.
Unbelievable.
So, yeah. So those guys became really good friends. The first time I ever made a dime at doing anything with a live event was when Brian and I went to the old Lone Tree Inn. Remember that restaurant at Milwaukee and Howard?
Yes, sir.
And it was a great, great old hangout. But for me, I was a kid. I never got to go there. So we got a dinner there from the Niles Little League. And at the end of the dinner, Brian says to me, come to the bathroom. I got to go. I said, I don't got to go. He goes, you got to go. So I went to the bathroom with him. And he hands me $30. I go, what's this for? He goes, your commission, you schmuck.
He goes, you got $300.
Didn't those guys ever pay you? Like those other guys that you booked before me? I said,
right.
No. He goes, oh, geez. He goes, well, you're supposed to get paid. You got me a gig that I didn't know I could get. So that's how it works. And that kind of started me off with, you know, the idea that I could make money by knowing these guys rather than having to be them.
Uh-huh. And there's way more to the story, which we'll get to momentarily. We got to go out to San Francisco. We got to meet Bill Graham. We got to hang out with rock stars. And we got to get into the concert promotion business. It is just an astounding story. Danny Zalisco's book is All Excess, Occupation Concert Promoter. More after this on WGN. Well, we're on the line here at 720 WGN. John Landecker with Danny Zalisco, and he's the author of All Excess, Occupation Concert Promoter. Before we get out to San Francisco, I'd love it if you'd tell me about your relationship. We've established that you had a good relationship with Brian Piccolo in the sense that he'd drive you home and take you to Niles after practice because he didn't want a teenager sitting out there getting cold.
I wasn't even 12.
What?
Yeah.
Seriously?
I was born in 54, so this happened in 65 to 68.
How in the world did you... What is it about you that could pull this off?
Well, I had a great older brother, and he loved to do it. He was 3 years older than me. And he brought me along with him, and fortunately I didn't bother him enough where he would, you know, get rid of me and not let me go. I served some purpose, and that's what kind of started us off doing it. We started writing to players and getting responses back. I got a letter from Yogi Berra the day after my 9th birthday when he was named manager of the Yankees, thanking me for the beautiful letter I wrote him, congratulating him on his new job. And it's in the book. I reprinted the entire letter.
Can you talk about your relationship with Ernie Banks?
You know, Ernie was the absolute greatest there ever was. When we were little kids, you know, I mean, it's famous, and everybody knows in Chicago how great Ernie was with everybody there. He'd sign autographs until everybody had one. And we hung out with him in those great 60s. years, but he retired in the early 70s. My brother Jimmy, who's no longer with us, but he started working with Ernie as a publicist and helping him, you know, find his way. Ernie didn't make the money these guys made today. Imagine what he would have made today.
Oh, unbelievable!
Right? Unbelievable. I mean, I think his top number was $100,000 for a year. After that, he had to figure out stuff to do, and he did. He found his way, and he did some fun things. Ernie even did a rap song. I got a copy of it somewhere.
He did a rap song?
He did a rap song about the Cubs.
I'd love to hear sometime.
I'll find it and make you a copy. It's amazing.
Please do. I can't wait to hear it.
As the years went on, you know, Ernie loved music. He loved Stevie Wonder and Alicia Keys. And his most recent favorite was Lady Gaga. He called me up and go, I want to go see Lady Gaga. And we set him up with that. Every year he'd come out here for baseball. We'd always get together. And in fact, one time, which I wrote about in there, he skated on Randy Hunley when Randy did his first fantasy camp.
Yeah.
Randy was like the first one to ever do that. And Ernie came out for one day. He was supposed to stay all week. And he didn't really like what he was going to have to do all week. So I dropped him off at the hotel. He says, come on in with me. We go in. He starts taking his uniform off, and he throws it to me. He goes, you're Ernie Banks. And I said, what? He goes, tomorrow and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, you're Ernie Banks. I'll come back Saturday and play in the game these guys are playing, but I got to go to L.A. I can't do this.
Yeah, these fantasy camps were guys would pay a lot of money to be able to go to it was like summer camp for a week, only you put on a real Cubs or Sox uniform or whatever team it was, and you got instruction from professional baseball players, and then at the end of the week there'd be a game that you could participate in with whatever baseball stars were there. I want to just jump back to Brian Piccolo for a minute and the untimely, very sad, his passing.
Yeah.
And you and Ernie Banks went to the funeral. And can you tell that story? Because it's something else.
Well, actually, you know, Ernie didn't go there. But, you know, Gail was there, of course, and all the other Bears. guys were there, and it was very sad. My dad took me, and I was crushed, and Gail knew me from the field and coming out to the park all the time, and he was very comforting to me. I always loved him for that. He went out of his way to be nice to me when he had plenty of other people
right.
to talk to. And after that took place, that was in 1970, I kind of turned my back on football. I was just too hurt by it, and I didn't want to go back to the park anymore. And then they moved over to Soldiers anyway, and I loved it at Wrigley. So I moved out of there in 72, and I didn't see Gail for years and years till later. And less than 10 years ago, I was doing Bob Seger at the Mandalay Bay in Vegas, and Gail was doing one of those autograph signings that we were talking about
in the
Mandalay Bay Mall there. And I went in and said hello to him. I reintroduced myself, and he had a hard time with it at first because I didn't look like a little kid anymore, and he didn't remember me. But I reminded him of enough stuff, and he remembered it, and he was very happy to see me. Later that night at the Seger show, show's almost over, I'm walking around the main floor, going backstage right at the end, and some guy comes running down the stairs towards me, and I don't know who it is, and it's Gail. And he almost tackled me, and he goes, "I got to meet Bob. I didn't know this was your show. This is what you do?" Yeah, this is what I do. So after the show, I went to Seger and said, "Hey, Bob, I got a friend of mine that wants to meet you." And he gives me the look like, "I'm tired. I just got off stage. Don't bother me. Who is it?" I said, "Gail Sayers." And he lost it.
Oh, you know it.
The entire band came out to meet Gail, and he was thrilled that they knew who he was. And they're like, "Are you kidding? We're nobodies. You're Gail Sayers." It was one of his greatest moments.
Well, you went out to San Francisco in 72, 73, somewhere around there?
Yeah, right after high school.
And then you ran into Bill Graham, who is the iconic concert promoter of all time, probably credited with the whole beginning of major acts being... Yeah, exactly. And is that where you got the bug for booking bands and being an agent?
I already had it from going to shows at the great, beautiful Auditorium Theater there in Chicago.
Yeah.
We also went to the Aragon. We went to the Erie Crown Theater. And I never went to Mill Run. It was right down the street. But I got the bug for concerts then. And then somebody put on a show at my high school that I didn't go to because I didn't like the way they promoted it. But it was Stevie Wonder and the James Gang for $3, and I didn't go.
Wow.
Yeah, that was smart. but I came out to Arizona for my Easter vacation from Park Ridge, and I saw this place out here in Phoenix called the Celebrity Theater, which is a theater in the round. And I loved it, and I loved the radio station, I loved the atmosphere, and I knew why P.K. Wrigley chose Phoenix to bring the Cubs out to and start spring training. I mean, everything ties back to sports.
Right.
And that's when the San Francisco trip happened, was over that same time. And I didn't get to meet Bill, but when I got there after high school was over, and I moved to Berkeley that summer immediately, I was 17, and I walked onto an equipment truck and started unloading gear for the group called Yes. And Bill busted me because I was talking with an English accent, acting like I was one of the Yes's road guys. So each thought that I was working for the other guy, and Bill found out, "Who the hell is this kid?" And we became friendly after that, and within a couple of years, I started every now and then doing some shows with him, and later on, we did a whole lot of stuff with the Grateful Dead together. It was tremendously successful.
But also, oh, wait a minute. Before we run out of time,
yeah.
I got to do the story about you're picking up a hitchhiker. I believe this was in Arizona. Right?
Yep.
You're driving down the road. There's a guy hitchhiking who's not wearing any shoes. Take it.
Right. Larry Hitchcock, his name was. We're driving, long-haired guy, wire-rimmed glasses. Just looks like a typical guy of that time. And he said, "Hey, do you got any extra time? Are you going to Tempe?" I said, "Sure." Went to Tempe, and I was driving my 63 Valiant and with the three on the tree.
You bet.
And we went to the store, got him some shoes, and he said, "That was really fun. Can you drop me off here?" "Yeah." I said, what are you doing here? He goes, I'm the production manager for Alice Cooper's Billion Dollar Babies Tour.
Now, wait a minute. What would the production manager of Alice Cooper's Billion Dollar Babies Tour, number one, be hitchhiking, and number two, not have any shoes on?
He said something to the effect, when I asked him that same question, if I told you, I'd have to kill you. So, it was one of those. I think I got the feeling that he had to leave somebody's house quickly. If you know what I mean.
Oh, I know what you mean. I know
you know
what
that
you
mean.
Oh, I know that one. You bet.
And so we got his the shoes, and I went down and I worked the show. And long story short, the rest of the story is in the book. But right. Bill Graham and Alice's manager Shep Gordon got into a fist fight because Bill threw Alice's dad out of backstage because he didn't have his all access pass on.
See. You gotta have your all access pass, man.
Bill didn't like people without their passes on, so he pitched them, and Shep went crazy, and they got into this giant fight. I thought they were going to kill each other, and they didn't, fortunately. But this is the way two Jewish guys from New York behave, you know. But they were friendly by and large. But and you know, Shep went on to become famous in his own right. He wrote a book and. In the movie called Supermensch.
Right.
But that's another story. You need to talk to him, too.
Well, the book is full of other stories with, oh my gosh, Barbra Streisand, Kris Kristofferson, Chuck Berry, John Bon Jovi, Tony Bennett, Muddy Waters, Genesis, Tina Turner, Billy Idol, Bruce Springsteen, U2, the Monkees, James Brown, hey, the fabulous John Prine, and it goes on and on and on. Wow, this has been great, man. Danny, I want to thank you for being with us. It's Danny Zalisco. The book is called All Excess, Occupation Concert Promoter. How do we get copies?
Well, you can go to DZPLive.com. That's Danny Zalisco Presents, DZPLive.com.